Hello there, everyone. Thank you once again for taking the time to listen to This Week in Mormons. It's nice to be with you. I haven't talked to you for a couple of weeks, and I apologize for that. Wonderful to hear the sisters last week. And the week before that, we actually did have a show recorded, but due to some technical difficulties, it never got published. And that's just going to disappear into the annals of history. Maybe for those of you who support us on Patreon, if you're, Patreon, which is patreon.com, where you can pledge money and help support TWIM, maybe we'll make that an exclusiver for you if you want to hear some disastrous audio. Let me know, Patreon supporters. Please drop me a line, jeff@thisweekinmormons.com. By the way, if you haven't done Patreon, check it out. It's like $1 a month if you want. It's any amount you want, but I'm just saying, hey, hop on there, folks, and pledge $1 a month to help us keep the lights on, so to speak. Anyway, you have not heard a co-host yet this week because once again, I'm going down the interview lane. Yes, and we're going to keep talking about marriage. You might remember a handful of weeks ago, I had Alan and Katie Mount on the show. They host the Marriage on a Tightrope podcast where they talk about their mixed faith marriage. If you haven't heard that, go back, look in the feed. It's a very worthwhile episode, one of the ones, quite frankly, I'm most proud of in nearly 10 years of doing this. And this week, we talked to Angeline and Nate Bagley, who host the Mormon Marriages podcast, which is focused more on how to celestialize your marriage, so to speak, but in a very real way. They collectively have done a lot of research on this matter. This is something they're passionate about. They're not just two people hanging out talking about their relationship. They talk about the real science involved behind relationships. And of course, they do it from a Latter-day Saint perspective. And it's a great interview. They're terrific sports for hanging out and talking to us. So you can go to mormonmarriages.com and subscribe to their podcast wherever you get podcasts. And likewise, if I can do a quick plug, please subscribe to This Week in Mormons wherever you get podcasts. Apple, Google, Stitcher, whatever you want, it's all there. And if you really, really would want to go the extra mile, write us a review on iTunes. When you do that, it helps us in rankings and searches and such. And so it helps other people find TWIM. It's not just about, oh, good, the show has more reviews and is more visible. It actually helps people find the show. It helps more people be aware of its very existence. And this is our 10th season. 10 seasons of TWIM. If this were a sitcom, they'd change our logo so it would be in gold lettering or something along those lines to celebrate such a wonderful milestone. So help make it good and write us a great review on iTunes. And you know, if you do it, we read them on air when they're worthwhile. Even the ones that say things like, these guys are morons. I embrace that. I appreciate your frankness. I take it to heart, but I do reject your theory. So that's going to be that. Anyway, enough of me. I want to let you have some time with the Bagleys, who are terrific. So let's turn the interview over to them. All right. So Nate, Angeline, Bagley. What's going on?
Hello.
Thanks for sitting
down. We're just hanging out with you.
As one does when you're on This Week in Mormons. It's just the hangout show of the millennium.
We're loving it. It's a nice place you got here.
My basement with IKEA furniture.
Your virtual chat space where Nate, we get to hang out with you.
I know you're a guest and you feel intimidated, but there's no need to patronize me or suck up. I'm fine. I'm a very mellow guy. I just want to go to Popeyes and watch Netflix. I'm good.
Perfect.
Next time we'll meet at Popeyes then.
Do they have Popeyes in Utah yet? Has it finally made it?
They do.
They do. It's been recent in recent years.
Have you been there? You'll know if you've been there because you'll feel it in your body for a number of days afterwards.
I felt it. I felt the Popeye hangover.
Not in Utah, but elsewhere.
The Popeyes hangover. And it like completed a piece of my soul when I ate at Popeyes for the first time because I finally understood the Aquabats song. Where they talk about all the different chicken restaurants that are so amazing.
Which song Aquabat? Is that? As a native Orange County, and I know the Aquabats.
I don't know. I just know it goes, chicken make me feel so good. And then they go, Popeyes, we got that chicken. Golden Basket, we got that chicken. My wife's looking at me like I'm crazy.
I've never heard this song.
This comes back from my ska days.
No, I like that. Okay, so Angeline, you just hang out, and Nate and I are going to talk about ska.
Angeline's too young to remember, ska being
popular. We're going to talk about why ska was, and also why it was basically a mistake.
That's why you wanted us on this podcast, right? Is just talk about ska music.
This
week in ska music.
Twisk.
I love it.
Oh, I was in a ska band in high school.
Doesn't surprise me.
That was the jam. I played saxophone in it. It was great.
I was going to guess saxophone or trombone.
No, it was the goofiest ska band you'd ever hear. Like all the the what rhythm.
What was the goofy ska band name?
No, we were called the Argyles. It was okay. It was two-tone, you know, it was old school, two-tone style, right? Argyles worked better. We had our this is the greatest digression ever, but we had our advisors for young men were two brothers who lived next door to each other. One was the singer. The other one was the keyboardist. And they had other like adult male friends who were the drummer, basically the actual band component. Uh-huh. And all of the horns were a bunch of youth like in our ward.
A bunch of 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds.
Yeah, like a bunch of 15-year-old guys playing sax. We had like three saxes, three trumpets, a trombone.
That sounds delightfully terrible.
And in an effort to fellowship, we included a tuba because he was sort of not totally active. So we wanted to
make
people
love
it. Perfect. We never played a show, but we did have stickers. It was awesome. Anyway,
that sounds awesome.
We talk ska all day, but that's not why we're all here. Though I am curious what your age gap is now that you say Angela.
Seven.
No.
7 years.
That's significant, children.
When I was on my mission, she was a beehive.
No, actually, yep, that's true.
That is true.
You don't want to throw that one out there. That just creeps you out.
No, it's weird.
I always say when he was getting the priesthood, I was in kindergarten. Yep.
That's what she says.
You always say that. That's how you introduce yourselves to people.
I was in kindergarten, Nate was getting the priesthood.
Nice to meet you.
Yep.
Well, this is lovely. You guys are clearly relationship experts. Look at the
clearly
repartee you have. So, Mormon Marriages podcast. Tell everyone about it. What's going on with this thing? You guys are, I feel like you guys are, you're rising right now, but you also started, mm-hmm, I think, over a year ago, right? It just kind of picked up steam.
It was a slow start.
It was about a year ago. We started it in February of 2018. Okay. So, Nate has his podcast called The Lovumentary, which he's had for almost 7 years now.
And what is this podcast? I should know.
It's the same premise. I went around the country, and it started by me going around the country and interviewing couples from all walks of life who were in love with each other to try and figure out what the common thread was that the most extraordinary couples did. What were the things the most extraordinary couples did that everybody else was missing out on? So I started this podcast. I ended up quitting my job to do it and doing a Kickstarter and raised like $30,000 and then published all these conversations, and people were like, oh, this is really interesting stuff. I've had a lot of these questions too. And then I started getting introduced to experts and a lot of like researchers and authors and really fascinating people in the relationship space that had answers, that had actual research and experience and provided really, really amazing stories and information that were really helpful to people. And then I got married, and Ange has kind of championed this dream of mine to rid the world of mediocre love. Mediocre.
Hi.
I basically said, like, I've always wanted to do a podcast that involved a little bit of my faith. And I asked her if she wanted to do it with me, and it was a husband and wife project, and she jumped on board, and she's like championed it. She runs the show now.
It's been fun. I've enjoyed it.
You guys can't see the smirk on her face, but when you said she runs it and she said it's been fun, there was a sense of ownership in Angeline's eyes.
Yeah, she legit runs it. Yeah. It's amazing. She's phenomenal.
But the premise of the show is that an eternal marriage doesn't start on your wedding day. It is created every single day afterwards. And a lot of times in the church, we prepare ourselves for the ordinance of being sealed together, but we don't talk much about what comes after that. And so there's a lot of generalized advice and a lot of really vague advice, like put Christ at the center of your relationship, or just read your scriptures together, or make sure you're praying together. And we wanted to be a resource to provide people with like real tools and real practical life advice that can help them actually create that eternal marriage now instead of just waiting for the resurrection.
So we talk about a lot of really uncomfortable topics. You know, we will talk about sex, we talk about conflict, we talk about depression, we talk about blending families and divorce, and we talk about a lot of things that you won't hear about in Sunday school that real couples are bumping into on a regular basis, and it's causing them struggle, and reading their scriptures more and saying their prayers more isn't going to necessarily take away the problem. So that's kind of our goal, is to give people some real practical examples and tools and principles that they can rely on to take their relationship from wherever it is and get one step closer to eternal marriage.
Now,
or celestial.
Now, do you do that because of your own expertise as an Uber couple, or is this more what you learn as you conduct interviews with others and you're all kind of learning together? I guess, is this top down or is this a collective effort of you as hosts with guests all learning?
I would say it's a little bit of both. Nate did so much research on marriage and relationships before we even got married. And I think as a couple, we've done a ridiculous amount of work, really, when it comes to making sure that we have a really good marriage. Yeah. And
pause for a second. Define a ridiculous amount of work. What does that mean? Do a ridiculous amount of work.
Yeah, we're pretty much always in the middle of a relationship book. We've taken we've traveled out to Seattle and gone through a pretty intense training for the 7 principles for making marriage work from the Gottman Institute. We've been to workshops and retreats together and been trained at the feet of some of the top relationship and sex experts on the planet. And I'm pretty sure that we've participated in conversations or been trained by some pretty incredible people who showed us the ropes, and we've been really fortunate to have access to them.
And I think we've only been married for 2.5 years, so we're still kind of newbies at this.
And we'll admit it.
And
we haven't been through everything.
We're in the thick of putting this stuff into practice. Mm-hmm. So,
but we do not preach what we do not practice.
Right. We try really hard to practice what we preach. And we heard once that the best mentors are people who are just a few steps ahead of you versus someone who's got
70 years of experience or something.
Why is that?
Decades and decades of experience. I think because they're at the point where they can still remember being in your shoes.
They can relate more, yeah.
And they can relate more. And it's a lot easier to imagine yourself a few steps ahead versus imagining yourself 2 decades down the line. And so we try and be that resource that's just a couple steps ahead, and we're putting it into practice as we go. And we try and be very open and honest with the work that we're doing and the lessons that we're learning. So a lot of our episodes, we open up about maybe conflicts that we've had and how we've navigated those conflicts and what we do to navigate those conflicts to give people real life examples of what they can do in the same situations.
You've teased us there. Can you give me an example of a recent?
Oh, we love to tease
anecdote that would illustrate that point.
Yeah, what's a good one? How about the Thai food one?
Go ahead, honey.
Yeah. What's there to disagree on with Thai food? First of all,
yeah.
So I admonish both of you.
That's the thing. Okay, that's the thing. So a couple months ago, I planned an awesome date night. It was last fall. We went to a corn maze. I took my wife to a corn maze for a surprise date. And then afterwards, I'm like, I'm going to take her to her favorite Thai restaurant, and it's going to be amazing. And we go to the restaurant, and she orders her favorite dish, Tom Kha Gai. Mm-hmm. And it's this amazing coconut cream soup. And she was so excited about it. And I ordered a different dish, and my dish came out, and I put a big scoop of rice on my plate and then put my curry or whatever on top of the rice and started to eat. And I just, the night had been so perfect. It'd been so amazing. I tried really hard to let Ange do the work on the corn maze and navigate. And I just was in the back seat, just enjoying watching her solve the puzzle. And it's just we just got along real well all night. And then, the moment I took a bite of that rice with the curry, I just got this look of like, I had just stabbed Angela in the heart. And I was like, what did I do wrong? And are the rest of the tables around us were uncomfortable with just the tension that was suddenly in the room. And the server,
it wasn't that bad.
This is very intense for having eaten a bite of Thai food. And then Angela's throwing daggers at you with their eyes, apparently.
And the server didn't want to spend any time at our table. And we didn't talk the entire rest of the evening at the restaurant. And then we got into the car and I was like, honey, what's going on? What happened? Why are we angry at each other? Why are we not talking? And it turns out we had been eating a pretty strict diet the last couple of months.
Per Nate's request.
Per my request. I was like, I want to lose some weight. I want to get in shape. And Ange had been such a champion. She had been cooking these really amazing meals that were really healthy. And we were kind of cutting out carbs.
Weeks and weeks of research and meal planning and just working really hard on our meals and making sure it was what Nate wanted.
Yeah. And our goal was to cut carbs. And so for her, me taking that big scoop of rice was basically giving her the middle finger Like just saying, I don't care about all the work and all the research and all of the effort that you've put into helping us stick to this super healthy diet and me to like lose some weight and get back in shape. And it just doesn't matter. And it like, it just hurt her. And on my side, I'm like, I just took you out on an amazing date and to get your favorite food. And I can't take a bite of rice. And, in that moment, we had an opportunity to perpetuate the conflict or to turn towards each other and resolve it. And we had learned some specific skills, and we put into place our conflict management skills. And before we left the parking lot, we were kissing and looking into each other's eyes and apologizing, and we got past it. And it seems like a small conflict, but these little conflicts sometimes build up in people's relationships.
Yeah,
and the way that you respond to emotional pain is very similar to the way that you respond to physical pain. Like if you burn your hand on the stove or get poked by a needle, you pull away from the thing that causes you pain. And in your relationship, if your partner hurts your feelings or does something that's painful to you, you kind of pull away emotionally. And I see a lot of couples, especially in the church, who don't know how to make those repair attempts. And over decades, these little hurts just pull them farther and farther and farther apart. And then when they get, 7 years, 10 years, 25 years into their relationship, they don't know how to be close anymore. They've never been able to apologize, to forgive, and to become one again. They've flinched away from each other so much that they're complete strangers.
Do you feel like that's an issue that's more prevalent in the Latter-day Saint community versus elsewhere, or is it about the same in and out?
It's probably the same.
I would say it's probably about the same. The only thing that I would say is different about the LDS culture is we don't, and I'm saying this as a generalization, obviously not everyone is this way, but a lot of times when we search for relationship advice or relationship information, we kind of put ourselves in a box where we only look at LDS resources.
What?
No,
that doesn't sound like our community.
That never.
Not at all.
Not at all. We look for books that are sold at Deseret Book. Maybe we go to a bishop
Look for a manual on LDS.org.
If we go to counseling, conference
going to bishops is my. That we could do a whole. You guys probably have. Anyway, that's a whole discussion about bishops. Yeah, yeah. We're not trained in anything. And anyway, yeah.
Yes.
But anyways,
untrained ecclesiastical leaders.
There is a plethora of relationships research and so many amazing things that don't necessarily come
with
endorsed by the church or with the prophet stamp of approval, and so we're missing out on a lot of things when we just put ourselves in that box. And we've done hours and hours of that research. And so we try and bring it through an avenue that people are willing to approach because the title is Mormon Marriages. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I get it completely.
So it's a little bit more approachable maybe than going to a different secular source. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even though, so basically you're incorporating secular teachings, but you're Trojan horsing it by calling it Mormon marriages.
I think truth is truth.
I mean,
but essentially, yes.
Oh, yes. You know, on that issue, obviously you started your, we are two parties with Mormon in our name, and mm-hmm. We both started these things before the great assault on all things Mormon. Mm-hmm. Do you guys feel any pressure to rebrand? Yes.
There is absolutely pressure.
And how? So I'm curious.
About once a week, we get an email from somebody saying, "Are you going to change your name?" Or just somebody passive aggressively being like, "I don't know who I'm receiving emails from because you're says Mormon, and I belong to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints."
Mother
and
Pearl.
And I'm like, "Ha ha ha."
Do you feel like it's actually? I'm not wanting you to divulge your numbers or anything, but do you feel like it's. It has caused issues even like your listener base. Do you think people have been less likely to approach your wonderful content because you're not getting in line and renaming your show Latter-day Marriages or whatever else?
Right.
Which we know is going to be Latter-day. I know what you're
going to call Latter-day Lovers.
I like Latter-day Lovers.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked a lot about doing that. And we started this podcast before that.
Yeah.
It came out. And it's just... It's hard to rebrand.
I dig my heels
in
a little bit more.
You can just take.
And honestly, a lot of our listener base, I would say, they're not going to be offended
by
that name.
That worry about much more important things.
They're a little bit more open-minded.
And you would hope. Yeah,
yeah.
Right. If they're not, then they can go find relationship advice elsewhere. So
They can go start their own relationship.
I'm not interested in your salvation, you punk. Stay away. We've been in the same boat too. A lot of emails and comments and things like that. I think it would crack me up if somebody on Facebook would send us a message, and I'd look at their page, like their profile, and they'd be sharing stuff from like LDS Living. And I'm like, LDS Living hasn't changed their name, but you're okay.
Yeah, right. Come on, guys.
There's a lot of
let's go LDS Living.
At play.
Change it.
We try and use the name of the church, and yeah, we try and avoid using Mormon in our interviews, but I don't think we will be changing the name anytime soon.
It was really nice to hear you say that.
Something we've been wrestling with a little bit.
And this has also been a conflict for which you...
Not really. Just an ongoing conversation without any tension.
I don't want to go back to the Thai food incident, but one thing that struck me in that story, and I imagine you guys have something to elaborate upon with this. So, Angeline, did you know you were going to the Thai restaurant when you were en route? Like, post-corn maze euphoria, as you were back in the car... Essentially, did you know what you were getting into as you were going there, and why did you not want to address it before the fact? Because you knew what the food would be, presumably, right? So why not do it then until it gets worse?
He surprised me with the Thai food restaurant. So I wasn't prepared to talk about it prior.
Right.
But I had also been working on another relationships advice that I had received to not treat my husband like a child and to let him take care of himself and make his own decisions. And we had already had previous conversations about this way of eating. And my opinion was, we'd already talked about it, so I'm going to let him make his own decision. And it shocked me a little bit that he ate the rice.
It's one thing I love about Ange.
I appreciate the shock that this... Please bear in mind, I'm not genuinely diminishing anything you're doing. But I like that this was about rice.
We can laugh about it
now. We were joking about Popeyes when we started the show. And like, that's the kind of thing, if I went to Popeyes, my wife would be like, you went to Popeyes?
Come on.
And that's a legitimate thing to get on my case for, greasy fried chicken. I like that you're at such a level that rice... Terrible rice, which sustains malnourished children the world over.
It was a very small, it was a big conflict over a small thing, but I think that's very typical of a lot of relationships.
No, it very much is, yeah.
And the nice thing about this situation is you can just kind of remove the variable of dinner and rice and just insert whatever it is that is your silly conflict you have in your marriage.
Being on the cell phone too much, coming home late from work, spending too much time on video games or sports, like President Nielsen said in his last talk in priesthood session.
But he fell short of just telling us to take a fast from it. That was a little disappointing.
you're the only one who was disappointed.
Well, I don't care. I don't watch it anyway.
Yeah. I don't have time for that.
Not anymore.
But I think we share that story because there's a couple things that we did that are kind of universal that you can apply to your own relationship. And the simple things that we did to heal in that situation was, number one, we have what's called a low negativity threshold in our marriage.
That's the scientific term.
And what that means is that we don't tolerate very much negativity in our relationship. We try and solve it quick. Meaning, for an analogy, let's say it's like the dishes. If you do your dishes as soon as you dirty them, it's so much easier to get the food off and clean it versus leaving it in the sink and letting things pile on over weeks and weeks. And then at that point, they've become moldy and disgusting and gross, and it's just a lot harder to clean up. So our mentality is we clean it up quick. We clean it up real time in the moment, if not soon after. And that keeps us from having this build of negativity, like he was saying, that increases your gap over time, the gap that you have in your relationship. And another principle that we use in this situation is the idea that an apology is not an admission of guilt, but rather an opportunity to heal a hurt from your partner. So it's so much easier to say sorry when you're not saying, because Nate didn't mean to hurt my feelings. He had no idea that that one scoop of rice would feel like a dagger in my soul of all the hard work and effort that I'd put into our meal plans. He had no idea. He didn't do it on purpose. And I recognized that. And so a lot of times when situations like that happen, saying sorry feels like, why would I say sorry? I didn't do anything wrong. But instead, he was able to see, even though I didn't feel like I did anything wrong, it still hurt Angeline. So I can say sorry as healing
it's
her.
It's playing the role of the savior in your relationship. When you apologize, you get to heal the wounds of your partner. It has nothing to do with being the bad guy or being the guilty criminal that did something wrong. And it has everything to do with you being able to literally play the role of the savior and heal your partner's hurts. Mm-hmm. And what a cool, what an awesome gift. What an awesome gift if your partner is hurting because of something you said or did by accident or a tone of voice that you used, to be able to turn around and say, I didn't mean to cause you pain. I'm so sorry. And then it's over. It's done. And they're healed.
That's usually what people need when they're hurting, is just to acknowledge that they get it. That, yes, you're hurting. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. Like we say this all the time. If you're in a crowd and you step on somebody's toes, you didn't mean to step on their toes, but usually you'll turn around and be like, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that. So why aren't we willing to do that for the one that we love most? We're willing to do that for a stranger that we've never met before, but we're not willing to do that with our spouse. So that's the second principle. And then the third principle.
Look at you just rattling off principles.
Is we use scripts. When we do conflict management.
We follow scripts.
And I know that a lot of people think it's cheesy to use scripts, but they work. And the script that we use with each other, and Brené Brown actually taught this just barely, and it was super validating. We just watched a Brené
Brown video. It was awesome.
But when we have conflict management, what we say is, the story I'm telling myself is, you don't care about all the hard work and effort that I put into doing the meal plans. And so when I do that, I'm taking responsibility for my perspective of the situation and not blaming Nate. Does that make sense? So I'm not saying you did this.
And then I get to confirm or deny the story, whether or not it's true. And I can be like, no, babe, I love and appreciate you so much for all that stuff that you did. I just didn't think a scoop of rice was that big a deal. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it would mean that much. And then...
And so the idea behind that is that your perception is your reality, and two people can be in the same situation, have a completely different perspective. And so by saying the story I'm telling myself is, you're taking full responsibility for your own perception. So that's what we used in
that
situation.
I don't need to see, you guys got the show, but I've already figured out, man.
Oh, you're the master of disaster. You're a freaking relationship Jedi.
I'm not a master. I guess my approach, I feel like my wife and I have a pretty solid relationship. We don't let stuff like fester or things like
that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I pretty much all the time just be like, thanks. Thanks for everything you're doing. Thanks for this. Thanks.
Dude, gratitude is a big win.
It's probably awesome. Overkill. I think I try to like gratitude bank it.
No.
That way when I screw Never up, I'm overkill. Like, I'm already, it's like your driving record. You know, you can get positive points in some states.
Yeah.
And so keep that bank positive.
Dude, there's science about the bank account, the love bank account. The research shows that the happiest and most fulfilled couples have a 20-to-1 ratio of positive to negative interactions, and that during times of conflict, the ratio drops down to 5 positive interactions to every 1 negative interaction, even in conflict. And the most miserable marriages, the ones that typically end in divorce, are about a 1-to-1 ratio.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Check yourself.
Lay it on thick.
How many positive interactions? If you're expressing lots of gratitude, man, you're filling that bank account, and making a withdrawal isn't as big of a deal as if you're in the deficit.
Well, and gratitude makes you happier anyway, because I think in marriages, like, you know, like you said, there's all the little things, and it's so easy to get wrapped up in random little annoyances that happen, just part of life that happens, right?
Yeah.
And I think these things, I'll be the first to admit, there's times when I come home from work and my wife's been here working hard all day with our kids, which is crazy taxing and difficult, and she's got all her own agenda items to work with. And sometimes, yeah, I might walk in the door and the house, it looks like a bomb went off, and you know, it's just whatever. And the thoughts that come through your mind are like, okay, again.
What did you do all day?
But I don't think it's wrong to have that fleeting thought, but it's really more of a question of what do you articulate after the fact? Do you just take a breath and just say, hey, it's great to see everybody, and just not worry about it? And that's what I try. I'm not perfect totally. With it, but I think for the most part, I try to just be happy to be home with kids and just, and my wife will always say something like, I'm sorry about the house. And all you can say is like, you're good. Everything's cool. We'll take care of this. It's fine.
We got to have you on the podcast now. We can do a whole gratitude episode.
I'm not perfect about this, but I have found that like, and I'm sure you've talked about like keeping score. That's the thing. I guess you can't keep score.
If you're not perfect at it, I guess we can't have you on the show.
That's fair. It's fine. I mean,
we only have perfect people on our show.
That's a shame, because in General Conference recently, Mr. Nate, we learned very clearly that it's not about being perfect. It's about being worthy. And so I don't know if I can trust
I must have slept through that
your
talk.
Mormon brand show with
Uh-oh.
I don't know about that. But speaking of Latter-day Saints, do you find there, what issues have you dealt with, especially in your show, but what do you see that's unique for Latter-day Saint couples compared to elsewhere, right? I mean, I'm sure there are particular issues or areas that are a little bit more salient and touching.
Yeah, there are a couple of things that come to mind. One that kind of comes up over and over and over again is... this all kind of blends together into a couple different points, but I think one thing that we're not very good at as Latter-day Saints is having boundaries in our marriage. And when I say boundaries, let me rewind and kind of talk about the symptoms of a lack of boundaries. The symptoms of a lack of boundaries are feeling burned out, feeling resentment, feeling frustration towards people, especially towards your partner, feeling like you're just really stressed and overwhelmed all the time. And like you feel a lot of pressure to get everything done and like you have no time or energy to do it all. Those are like the big symptoms of a lack of boundaries. And
what does that mean? What is the lack of boundaries? What is that? Those are symptoms.
Yeah.
What's the disease?
So I think the disease comes from, and Angeline said it perfectly, the JOY acronym.
Yeah. So in Relief Society and Young Women's, and this is specific for women, but again, generalized, a lot of times we're told about sacrifice and serving others, and that if you're serving others, all your problems will just go away.
If you just put your partner's needs before your needs,
and
you'll always be taken care of.
One acronym that I hear taught all the time is this idea of the word JOY, JOY.
That's how you spell JOY, yes.
Yes.
Correct.
First, you serve Jesus, then you serve others, then you serve yourself. And I find this so frustrating, because you can't serve somebody else without having your own...
Tankful.
Like, you can't fill somebody else's cup if your cup is empty. And so I don't like this idea of being self-sacrificing to the point where you are literally running on an empty tank. And we see this so much. And a lot of times for women, if they're feeling resentful of their spouse, if they're feeling like they're not getting any help around the house, if they are, just not happy and upset, usually it means that there is some amount of a lack of self-care. They're not taking care of themselves. They're not doing something for themselves that makes them happy.
They're not taking responsibility for their own well-being.
Right.
So the concept of boundaries with regards to what Angeline is saying is a boundary is supposed to let all the good things out, good things in, and keep the bad things out. And a lot of times, what happens inside the church is it's like, okay, well, I need to help my kids with their Eagle Scout project and their Young Women's in Excellence. And I need to fulfill my calling, and I need to make dinner for the neighbors, and I need to plan so-and-so's wedding. And, I need to make sure that my husband is happy and satisfied in every way. And I need to make sure that we're getting our homework done and that we're all getting straight A's. And I need to make sure that my Instagram profile looks really great and my house is perfectly clean. And there's all this pressure to do all of these things. And I've got the PTA, and I've got this volunteer thing, and Sister So-and-so asked me if I could take care of, this volunteer opportunity. And they say, say yes to everything because they've got the joy mentality, Jesus, others, self, and it's Jesus, others, Jesus, others, Jesus, others. And they get to this point where they start, they keep giving and giving, but the giving stops coming from a place of generosity and starts coming from a place of resentment. And they're just like, I can't give anymore, but I'm going to keep giving anymore.
Obligation.
Yeah. And so creating boundaries means being able to say no to some things in order to protect the things that are most important to you. So if your marriage, your relationship with your children, your relationship with Christ are the most important things, sometimes you have to say no to really good things. Sometimes you have to say, you know what? I don't think I have the bandwidth to go do my ministering assignment this month, and I know it's important. And maybe I'll just send a text instead of paying a visit, because what I really need to do is spend, my husband's got a busy calling and a busy job, and I need to just take an evening and go for a walk, and tonight is my only chance.
Maybe I need to say no to planning the Christmas dinner for the ward.
Maybe I can't go, you know, volunteer at my friend's wedding and spend an entire evening over there. Maybe what I really need to do is like get a certain project taken care of, or sit down and just connect with my kid who I haven't talked to that I'm feeling distant from, or just take a bubble bath and take a deep breath and like relax for 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of, I find it particularly common with women, but it happens a lot with men as well, that they're walking through their life and they're not happy and they're feeling like they're doing all the right things and they're feeling burned out and they're feeling a sense of powerlessness. They're feeling like, if I'm doing all the right things and serving all the people and doing, you know, fulfilling my calling and I'm still miserable, what's the deal?
Yeah.
And I think that we would do very well to learn a little bit more about boundaries. So there's a lot of great resources out there. There's a great book called Boundaries and by McLeod and Townsend. And they wrote a book specifically called Boundaries in Marriage. If you want something that's specific for that, I've got a podcast on the Lovumentary about boundaries with John Townsend. And there are a lot of other really great resources out there to start learning about this stuff. And it's just not something that we talk about, but it is something that God teaches. God makes agreements with us, and a lot of those agreements have conditions. God says no to things. Think of all the times Joseph Smith went to God and said, "Hey, can I do this thing? Can I do this thing? Can I do this thing?" And he's like, no, not a good idea. You know, he, with the children of Israel, like he gave them limits. And sometimes we feel like we can't give other people limits and we can't say no to other people, but we find it in the Savior. We find it in the prophets. We find it in God, in the Old Testament, the New Testament, and the Book of Mormon. Like God has limits and God says no, and it's okay for us to say no sometimes too.
Yeah.
That's one thing.
That's one. That's one.
Well, and along those same lines, I think another aspect of this idea of serving and self-sacrifice is we have almost lost the ability to ask for what we want and to be okay for verbalizing our desires.
Because it's selfish.
Because it's selfish. So instead we try to manipulate others into giving us what we want. Like, for example, if I want Nate to help me with the dishes and he's sitting down at the table, maybe I start clinking the dishes really loud and like sighing.
You gotta take a page from my grandma's playbook. Yeah, you just stand there. No. Yeah. No, I've got it. No, I got it.
No. I'll do it myself. And so we manipulate others into feeling guilt or feeling like they need to help us instead of just saying, "Hey, honey, I'd really love some help with the dishes."
But what about Nate? Why aren't you stepping up, man?
He should read my mind.
You know, what's really weird is when I got married, I really expected to be given the gift of telepathy.
Sure. Right.
The thoughts and yearnings and desires of my wife's heart. And I just must not have been righteous enough because I did not get that gift. I did not get the gift of mind reading. So unfortunately, my wife... And it's really a shame. Maybe if I had been more righteous, but she has to ask for what she wants.
I do. I have to verbalize.
But the cool thing is when she asks, she almost always gets it.
I'll even ask for acknowledgement. Like I'll bring him into the bedroom and be like, "Look, honey, I folded all the laundry. Will you say thank you?"
And I go, "Oh my gosh, look at all the laundry. It's so folded and amazing. You're so great."
And then I get what I want.
Do you guys have like Nest cams or anything in your house? Because I kind of want to hack it.
You want to hack in and watch us?
Just observe.
Some people might be listening.
I think we need a reality show with you too,
guys. some people might be listening and thinking like, you guys are cheesy. Like, this is stupid. I don't want to do that. But yo, like, it's reality too. And we're
not perfect at it.
We're not perfect. But like, as cheesy as it is, it works. Asking for what you want. And I'd rather be cheesy and happy than not cheesy and boring and miserable.
Yeah, for sure.
The most guaranteed way for you to not get what you want is to not ask for it.
But that does give you the opportunity to complain about not getting it after you don't get it and making
and
it your partner's
resentful.
Fault.
Now, you do say, you know, it's good to ask for things. But likewise, does someone being asked of something reserve the right to refuse the request without recrimination? What if you say, Nate, could you come do the dishes? And he's just like, I don't really want to. I'm being honest with you. What do you do then? Do you accept that and move on? Or do you say, but I'm telling you what I... So you could get into a bit of a cycle on an endless loop, but...
This will take us down a rabbit hole. Yeah. What do you do, Ange?
What do you do then?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know if that's something we've bumped into.
I want to know at what point you hit him with something. That's what I'm trying to get at.
I mean...
Only when I ask for it.
Wink!
Please, would you please hit me right now with a frying pan?
That's a good question. I don't know if we've ever bumped into that.
I think part of it is... that's probably happened before. Like, if I say no when Angela asks for something and can't get it, part of it has to come from... I can say no gently, or I could say no like a jerk. I could say, honey, I'm sorry, I'm in the middle of something. Can you give me 10 minutes? And I'd be happy to come help you. Or I can just be like... Nope, I'm not doing that. And that's on me, how I handle that. And also, there's a part of what she experiences, which is like she's going to have emotions and she gets to own those emotions regardless of what answer I give her.
So remember when we were talking about our perception being our reality? Something that I've been working on a lot lately, and I'm still not perfect at it, is always assuming that Nate has good intentions for what he does.
Mm. I love it when she assumes that.
So before, if he would say no, I would huff and puff and tell myself all these stories that he didn't love me and that I wasn't a priority for him and all these things. But lately what I've been trying to do is if he says no, I tell myself that he has a good reason for that. That he's probably in the middle of something. And I think that takes a lot of practice. And a lot of intentionality.
You're such an awesome
to
wife.
Do. It's not easy, and I can't say that I do it perfectly, but I'm trying to give Nate the benefit
a lot to
of
me
the doubt
that you try,
and to trust
and
him.
It makes a big difference.
And to just put more trust into my husband, and if I ask him for something that I want, to trust that he has my best interest in mind, and that he's going to find a way to give me that, even if it's not in a way that I would do it. Like something I relinquished early on in the marriage is he puts the cups in the cupboard right side up. And I always grew up putting the cups in the cupboard right side down.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's wrong to put the cups in right
side
up.
She let me have it.
But I've learned that nobody's going to die if the cups are in the cupboard right side up. And I'd much rather him do the dishes and be grateful for him doing the dishes than tell him how to do the dishes. Because a surefire way of him never wanting to do the dishes ever again is to tell him that he's doing it wrong. So,
which we also experienced that once.
Well, we're human, you know. How did you guys, how'd you guys meet anyway? What's the story of your relationship?
I walked out of the temple one day and she was walking in.
No,
that didn't
happen. we met in a singles ward.
Yep.
Yeah.
Camping.
At a steak camp out on the dance floor.
She winked at me and I said, okay. Yep. I will date you.
I did wink at him mainly because he was 7 years older than me and
off limits, friend zoned.
I did not think anything of dating him.
Then why did you wink at him? That's just a big tease, Angela.
She was flirty.
I was in the groove dancing and I just was in the moment and we made eye contact and I don't know what came over me.
Came over her.
Law passion. That's what it was.
The spirit.
You fell in love with the beard.
I did. Yep. So.
And then we became really good friends and watched Survivor every week together and played Keep Talking.
So nobody explodes. That's a fun game.
I'm not familiar with this one.
It's a fun game.
It's a game where you defuse bombs together.
And one person is the bomb diffuser, and then everybody else playing has a manual, and the bomb diffuser has to communicate the puzzles on the bomb. Uh-huh. And the people with the manuals have to walk the diffuser through the steps of how to, like, what wires to cut and what buttons to push in what order.
So we became very good communicators even before we started
very
dating.
Good. At least with that game, we could diffuse bombs real quick.
Yeah.
Now, but Angeline, so getting into this, obviously, Nate, you've already had kind of your background where you'd gone off and started getting very involved in relationships and interviewing people and traveling the country. So what was it like on your end, Angeline, coming into this? Was there a part of you that's like, dude, this guy's intense with relationship stuff? Like, I have to imagine most people don't assume they're going to get into a relationship with somebody who's that invested in the mechanics. And
right. Well, initially I was really intimidated thinking that Nate would have super unrealistic expectations of relationships because he had done all this research. But the more I got to know him and the more I became friends with him and we had these conversations, I realized that he had the most realistic view of relationships from the research that he'd done than anyone I'd met before. He was like, he knew what real relationships looked like. And I remember one instance in particular, it was when we were still just friends. Him, myself, and another one of our friends was down in his basement and he had just gotten back from a date. And he kind of started venting his frustrations with dating, mm-hmm. how he'd been trying so hard to better himself and he'd been trying so hard to crack the code of what made a relationship work. And he just wanted somebody to play the game with him. That's what his words were. He just wanted someone to jump on board and be as excited about this stuff as he was. And I remember in that moment thinking, I want to play the game.
Yeah.
Like, I want this to be my dream too. Like I loved the picture that he was painting of the life that he wanted. And in that moment, it became my dream as well.
And that's when she looked at me and said, "Will you have my babies?"
It scared me because
can't wait to see where the show is when that happens too, by the way. That's going to be,
yeah, it's going to be fun yeah, times.
Whenever you guys, fun. If and when you decide to do that, that'll be
right. Yeah. So, I married into this, but it's very much become a mutual dream. I loved hearing what he wanted out of life and what he wanted out of relationship.
Well, now look what we get to do. We get to hang out with people like you. And
are you sucking honestly, up again, dude?
No, but I am. I'm being honest. About like,
this. We've met some incredible people through the work that Nate does, through the podcast
that you do, that we do together.
Right, that we do together. Yeah,
remember, she runs it, though. Remember, don't forget.
She does.
I do.
Dude, if you want to read some awesome blog posts, go check out the Mormon Marriages blog.
What's the URL? Tell our listeners. It's plug
Mormon
time.
Mormon Marriages.
It's mormonmarriages.com. Sorry, did you want me to finish that jingle?
I just wanted to say .com. But I like the way that you did it anyway.
/blog if you want to go directly to the blog. And the blog is essentially just our podcast episodes that are accompanied with articles.
That is not true. Well, the articles you write are not always the exact podcast. It's not like it's transcribed. It's beautiful thoughts out of your brain.
I like to write an article along with all the podcast episodes.
They're really good. And I think a lot of people who listen to the show miss out on the article, and it's real good.
Look at this beautiful Squarespace website you have.
You like the Squarespace website?
Looks good, man. It looks better than mine.
Nate's really good at that stuff.
It's not a competition.
No, it's fair. I've never had a great website for TWIM.
It's what's on the inside that matters. Appearances
can
be deceiving.
But aesthetics matter and, you know, SEO quality and all that garbage. So, you know,
yes,
fun times like that. The Bagleys are just an interesting gang, aren't they, man? So I lead off with this. So I actually know Nate's brother. I was in the same ward as him. We didn't know this when we were setting this up. I just got in touch because we got in touch and thought it'd be fun to have you guys on the show. And then when I saw some mutual friends on Facebook, I was like, ha! Huh! And then I saw you, Nate, and realized I can see the family resemblance, obviously.
Yeah.
And your brother.
I'm a fatter, hairier version of Joshua.
I wasn't going to be the one to say it, but sure.
I'll say it.
If you want to go out that way. I mean, you're the marriage expert. He's an expert in old people. It's great. You guys have...
Right.
We just need a pediatrician, and we got it covered.
Really well.
It's like you're handling the now, how to build towards the eternities, and he handles...
Exactly.
He's kind of handling the handover.
On the way out.
Yeah.
Sad. Oh man, what do you guys have? You guys have any? Obviously, you're producing blogs, podcasts, Yeah. Do you guys ever like gather with listeners? Do you have any things going on? I know sometimes you give away books and stuff, but do you have like a thing? Are you promoting any big events? Anything happening right now?
We do have some really cool stuff coming up. So I also run the website utahdatenight.com. So this is specifically for people in the Utah area. But if anybody's listening from Utah, go to utahdatenight.com. And we've got some fun date night events that we're planning that are kind of a great alternative to dinner and a movie.
Let's look at this. Oh, look at your headshot, sir. My goodness.
Oh, no. I don't know if I've updated it to the new landing page yet, but no, by the time this goes live, it'll...
So what does one do with Utah Date Night?
So the whole premise is we want to give you a night of entertainment and education. So the two events that we've got coming up, the theme is keeping the magic alive. So we've got a professional magician coming in to entertain and delight you. And then we've got some of the top experts in the state, actually in the nation, they're amazing. One of them is me and one of them is Laura Heck. She's a certified Gottman therapist, and we're going to share some thoughts about how to keep the magic alive in your relationship. And we give away tons of awesome prizes and really great desserts, and you will be physically fed and you will be relationally fed.
And so, I see this is by the Jiffy Lube and Draper. That appears to be its location.
Oh, that's a workshop we got coming up. Yeah. The Seven Principles workshop. Yep.
Good deal.
But these two will be the one in Utah County is going to be at the UVU Ballroom, and the one up in Davis County is going to be at the ballroom at Weber State University. So,
dude, you're living it, man.
We're living the dream. So come hang out with us. If you enjoy this interview, we'd love to see you face to face.
We've got some really cool ideas coming up as well for some online challenges and courses
specifically for the LDS community.
So we'll be getting those out
for
soon.
For the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints community.
There's the one for the restored members.
Sorry,
the restored members of the Testimony of Truth or whatever. Are you guys able to quantify your
praise
success? Not quantify like the numbers for your podcast, but as far as, you know, relationships are very qualitative in essence, right?
Right.
How does one measure success? I mean, I think it's obviously if you just see improvement in a broadly speaking term, but like when you go through these steps, you guys seem to be very structured with the way you approach these things. Is there a way? And we like to avoid checklists. I think as Latter-day Saints, we have a terrible tendency in our discipleship to sort of embrace checklists when we shouldn't. But at the same time, steps can be really important. So how do we actually like measure success?
I'd say a really good benchmark is to just take a minute and think about how often you're passionately kissing each other. Honestly.
Soul kissing, as we would call it, yes.
Pre-soul kissing.
The late president.
And with mild to heavy petting.
If you're married already, everybody. All right, nothing crazy.
But I would say the frequency with which you are making out is a pretty good indicator of the status of your relationship. If it's been a while since you had something beyond a peck, maybe it's time to take a little inventory of your relationship.
Now, I don't want to dwell on that. I mean, and sex is important too. Now, do you actually mean... Just are you asking like how long has it been since you've had more than a peck? Or are you actually saying how long has it been since you like just made out and you didn't take it a step further? Which are you, are you trying to hone in on?
I'm just literally talking about making out.
Okay. Like, cause that as a married couple, that shows a lot just to be able to sit and kiss each other. It means you like each other.
Well, I think that's a really good point. Cause I think a lot of people have when you get married, you know, you make out a ton before you get married.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you get married and there's other exciting stuff you can engage in. And so, while there's kissing and such, you don't spend hours making out anymore because you just don't do that. And so I do think that's a compelling challenge. Yeah.
You hear of people who are absolutely unhappy in their marriages, yet they're still popping out babies.
I'm not going to lie. Kissing, I think, is a more intimate experience in many ways than sex. You can have disconnected sex, but it's really hard to make out with somebody and like check out mentally. Like you have to be engaged.
I think another way you can measure success again, qualitatively is simply peace of mind. I think
great thought.
A lot of times if there is discord in your relationship, there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, a lot of worry, even if it's not things pertaining to the relationship. But one thing I've noticed between Nate and I, when we can overcome a hurdle or overcome a conflict, there's just this sense of peace. Like we don't have to worry about anything. We know we can trust the other person, and Yeah. I love feels that feeling.
There's no walking on eggshells. There's no topics that we're dancing around. If you feel like you've got some of that action going on, there's some work to be done.
We don't have things looming over us. It's just when you have that low negativity threshold, it's hard to remember what we were even fighting about because we got rid of it already.
So fast.
We fight all the time.
Hey, Jeff, how'd you like that? How'd you like that 30-minute episode that we recorded in only 52 minutes?
This is what always happens on the show, dude. Don't worry about it.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
You know how many episodes of TWIM have actually clocked in under 40 minutes?
Not that many.
One.
I can actually tell you this one episode. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, sure, I guess, as long as the listeners are happy. I mean, for all
I'm
know,
glad we're not I'm just glad we're not an anomaly.
No, you guys are doing fine. This is a beautifully lengthed episode, in case you're worried about it. This is great. But we'll call it here. I want to thank Angeline. And Angeline, by the way, wonderfully Utah name. I'm sure you know this. But Angeline, right? Y, that's strong. Yes. I mean, I did, before we were talking, I didn't know if Nate was from Utah. I kind of assumed you were, not to be rude. But
My dream, Jeff, is to have three boys named Braxton, Paxton, and Jackson.
No, thanks. But it's interesting. My siblings are Amy, Abby, and Matt. And then there's Angeline.
So you got to have the fun name. I mean, no offense to them, but I mean,
it's true. I like
who's
my
named Matt. I mean, other than Matt, it's so boring.
Yeah.
I like your name too. Great stuff. You guys are doing great stuff over there at Mormon Marriages. So I hope all of you listeners will go check out their podcast. You guys publish? Do you guys have a regular publishing schedule, or is it
every other week?
Every other week. Again,
it's kind of a hobby, so sometimes we're not exactly on schedule, but.
We're pretty close.
Yeah. Usually every other week.
We've got some really cool episodes coming up that we just had a great conversation with, a gentleman who struggled with opioid addiction.
Okay.
And he provides a lot of great resources for family members of those who might be struggling with addiction and how they can support them.
We have an interview coming up with a couple who has been
struggling with infertility
and are now adopting a child. Just lots of really great stuff coming up. So
it's awesome. Well, you're doing the good work.
Yeah. Thank you. As are you.
So everyone go to mormonmarriages.com, and I believe you can subscribe in iTunes and Google and all.
Yep. This is true.
Anywhere you can find podcasts.
Well, guys, thanks so much for taking the time to hang out with me tonight. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
Godspeed.
Thank you.
And thus ends our episode for the week. Thank you very much for tuning in, everybody. Once again, as I always request, visit us online. Give us that sweet web traffic, that nectar that drives us and makes us so happy. And join us on social media. I haven't plugged that, but you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We are there. We publish more than just podcasts. We have extensive blogging, original content that we put up, and we hope you'll take the time to appreciate that and interact with us on there and be part of the greater TWIM family. Otherwise, much appreciation again to the Bagleys for sitting down with me. And I hope all of you have a terrific rest of your week and that you had a great Easter and that everything is just going your way. So until we talk to you again next week, it will be another show. Yeah, it should happen. Here's hoping. Anyway, this has been This Week in Mormons. My name is Jeff Openshaw. Be well, be holy, and be happy.